they're always, you know, twofers is what we call them. They're two for one. It not only does it give you a win, it gives somebody in the division a loss. And they're not one of the division leaders, but at the same time, they were ahead of us, so it helps. You're just right now, you're just trying to climb and find a way to get the opportunity to play in late January. That's what you're trying to get the opportunity to do. And if we can build on this, we got a bunch of games left with an opportunity.
Let's not get too carried away with the late January there, Coach. Let's just get to January 1st. And as ridiculous as it may have seemed a day ago, the Bills actually have an opportunity to make this thing interesting. I'll explain why here in a minute. But first of all, I want to say this. Why aren't you using C.J. Spiller more? And I know it sounds like a broken record, but I've been saying it all year. And it's almost like there's this weird high school pecking order in Buffalo. Fred Jackson's the senior, so he gets to play. C.J. Spiller's the sophomore. He has to wait his turn. That's ridiculous. Use the best guy. Is it going to create a locker room problem? So what? If it creates a locker room problem, that's the problem of the guys in the locker room who have a problem with it. C.J. Spiller's the best running back. Use him. It's almost like they've got this fast car they're afraid to drive because they don't want to wreck it. Yeah, there's a chance C.J. Spiller gets injured if he gets 30 touches a game. Give him his touches. Last night he had those 22 carries for 91 yards. He added another 39, I believe, 138 total yards for a guy who is a dual threat out of the backfield catching the ball. He had 3 catches for 39 yards. So that's 25 carries, 25 touches for 128 yards. That's not a bad night. 130 yards? I don't know. My math isn't very good. That's why I'm in this business. If my math was good, I'd be doing math right now. Maybe it's good that my math isn't good. Anyway, the Bills need to get better when it comes to deciding who they're going to use. Use the best guy. Use Fred Jackson as a compliment. Put them both on the field. They talked at one point about that possibility. C.J. Spiller creates matchup problems. Make Fred Jackson the tailback. Move C.J. Spiller around. Freak teams out. Make them think that he's going to get the ball in space. The guy is dynamic. The guy is explosive, and you've got to use him, period. You can't put him on ice. You can't wait for next year. There may be no next year for the head coach, for the GM, for the owner. Use him now. And if I'm the owner, 94-year-old Ralph Wilson, God bless him, I hope I make it to 94, I'm on the phone with somebody saying, look, I only got so many more football games left. I want to see this guy carrying the ball 25 to 30 times a game in every game that I have the privilege to watch this kid play. He's a special back. Let's use him. And if they use him down the stretch, things really could get interesting. Consider the remaining schedule for the Buffalo Bills. They're at Indianapolis, week 12. Not an easy game to win, but they could steal that one. Beyond that, it softens up. Jacksonville and St. Louis at home. I know the Rams are playing tougher, but that game's in Buffalo. Seattle and Toronto. Anytime you get Seattle out of that CenturyLink field, you got a chance at beating them. Miami in Miami. And then the Jets to wrap up the season. When you consider the fact that the injury to Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger puts that sixth seed in the AFC up for grabs. You look at a team like the Bills, team like the Bengals. One of these teams could rise up out of that scrum of 3-6, 4-6, 4-5 teams and pick off the Steelers at number 6. The Bills have a chance to do it. To do it, you got to use C.J. Spiller. Let me flip it around and say one quick thing about the Dolphins. Here's what I think is happening with the Miami Dolphins. Defenses have figured out what they're doing on offense under Mike Sherman as the offensive coordinator, Ryan Tannehill as the quarterback. And Sherman has yet to adjust. You know, we hear this all the time. Bill Belichick, Patriots head coach, as if you need me to tell you. But his point is, and he won his first Super Bowl with this mindset, you take away what the other team does best. The New England Patriots were committed in Super Bowl 36 to taking away Marshall Faulk and Mike Martz, the offensive coordinator, or what was he was the head coach of the Rams at the time, he refused to go to something else. He wanted to go to the thing that he thought worked. Whatever they're doing in Miami now, they're taking away what they do best, and the Dolphins aren't adapting. The Dolphins aren't adjusting. There's enough game film out there on what the Dolphins are doing. The Dolphins have to change, or they're going to continue to not score offensive touchdowns. They were shut down by the Titans, scored only 3 points. They scored 13, 14? Oh, wait a minute. Are they not scoring offensive touchdowns? I may have my facts all screwed up. What was the final score of that game last night? 19-14? Did they score any offensive touchdowns? Yeah, they did. All right. Well, they scored one, but they got to keep scoring more. That's my point. I'm going to move on before I make it any worse. What's my next topic? Oh, Sean Payton. Okay, look, this thing is getting because the Saints right now have an exclusive window to try to fix the issue in the Sean Payton contract. And there's 12 weeks and 2 days to do it before he would become a free agent. The only other team that people think he would be seriously interested in is the Dallas Cowboys. We don't know whether or not the Cowboys are going to have a vacancy. The possibility of Sean Payton being available could cause a vacancy to arise in Dallas. And we would be very naive if we assume that there won't be any back-channel communications about whether or not Payton would be interested, whether or not the Cowboys would be interested, what it would take to get Payton there. It would be a violation of tampering rules, of Payton suspension, but for the stakes being as high as they are when you're talking about firing a head coach, hiring a new one, those back-channel communications are going to occur. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I'm just telling you they're going to occur. So, as we get closer and closer to the end of the season, Saints fans need to get more and more nervous about what may happen here. Mike Triplett of the New Orleans Times-Picayune had a great analysis. It's not a report. It's an analysis. I've been getting tweets from people and emails saying that Mike Triplett's reporting that Sean Payton's going to keep his options open, that he's not going to sign his contract. He's not reporting that. He's just saying this is probably how it'll play out. This is probably what will happen. It could come down to Sean Payton sitting back and waiting to see how things play out for the Cowboys and for the Saints. If the Cowboys make it to the playoffs, it's harder to fire, much harder to fire Jason Garrett. If the Saints flame out down the stretch, it's harder to let Sean Payton walk away. So there's a lot of factors here, but you know, here's the bottom line. These two parties, Saints and Payton, did a deal last September, and it had one term in it that the league didn't like. And they both agreed to this term. This bothers me about any type of a business where you've got some home office that isn't connected. I mean, it's a $1 billion company, the New Orleans Saints. If they want to choose to have that term in there, why the hell can't they? I'm bothered by that, as you may tell. But Sean Payton and the Saints came to a deal that he's going to stay there through 2015. The Saints have stood behind him through this whole bounty thing where he's suspended for a year. At a certain level, loyalty, gratitude, fairness, equity, the right thing to do is to fix this and honor your commitment. Now, I understand circumstances change. He's gone through a divorce. Maybe he wants to live in Dallas so he'll have more time with his kids. I admire that if that's a factor. But say that now. Don't let this play out and see how you can work it to your advantage. And this is where you can get a disconnect between the agent and the client. They need to be on the same page. The agent may be saying, let's play this out. This is how we do business. At a certain point, the client's got to stand up and say, look, I made a commitment to the Saints. They made a commitment to me. If I choose not to stay here for family reasons, then that's a different issue. I'm not going to stay here because of family reasons. But I just feel like there's more of an obligation from Sean Payton to get this fixed because he already had given a commitment that he was going to stay there. Now, I know we have to put a value on what this term is worth that's disappeared, that he would be able to walk away if Mickey Loomis is no longer the general manager. But I just feel like this is something that is a matter of fairness needs to get resolved, but we'll see how it plays out. And if I'm a Saints fan, I'm getting very nervous. And if I'm a Saints fan, I don't know who to root for when the Cowboys and the Saints get together in week 16. Because if the Cowboys don't get to the playoffs, the chances of losing Sean Payton go up. If the Cowboys get to the playoffs, chances of keeping Sean Payton increase. Chances are we're going to have a good game on Sunday between the Colts and the Patriots. A year after the game ended up being, it ended up being a pretty good game, but the Colts were 2-14, the Patriots were the Patriots. Now this year, the Colts are the Colts again with Andrew Luck. And here's an angle that we really have to keep an eye on. I mentioned this last night on Pro Football Talk. I want to mention it right now. The Patriots have a knack for blowing leads in the fourth quarter. The three games they've lost, they blew leads in the fourth quarter to the Ravens, to the Cardinals, and to the Seattle Seahawks. And the Patriots almost blew another lead on Sunday against the Bills, and they almost blew a lead against the Jets. They fade down the stretch. Look at the Colts. They have 6 wins. Only one of them was a wire-to-wire, we're taking this thing and we're gonna run with it, and that was against the Jaguars 8 days ago. The other 5 wins have been the product of close, hard-fought games, with several come-from-behind wins in the fourth quarter. So this thing, when you piece these two teams together, if the Patriots don't get out to a big lead, and even if they do, who knows how safe it is, but the Patriots need to go for the kill shot here quickly. They let the Colts hang around. The Colts have already shown they know how to stay in games, they know how to win games late, and the Patriots have shown us they know how to blow games late. So This could be the game of the day. It was flexed from 1 o'clock to 4:25 Eastern time for a good reason. This could be a very good game. And a lot of people are paying attention to the Colts, as we should. They're 6-3. If they beat the Patriots in New England and go to 7-3 and remain on the heels, now two games behind, but still within striking distance of the Texans, given that they play the Texans twice in the final 3 weeks, the story of the year gets even more compelling. And really, the two big stories right now of the year in the AFC, the Colts and the Broncos, just feels like they're destined to get together in the postseason. And wouldn't that be the highest rated non-Super Bowl? And, you know, we go back to that Dolphins-Bears game from 1985, back when there were still, you know, only primarily three or four channels people watched. It's going to be hard to overcome that rating. It could be a big number if you're talking about Broncos and Colts getting together in the playoffs. So we'll see how that plays out. Great game on Sunday. A lot of great games on Sunday. Great game on Sunday night. That's what we're going to focus on when we return with Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. A lot of questions about the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. A lot of names. That's all I did for my prep. One name after another. Because the stories are out there. Who's playing? Who's not playing? Who's coming back? Who's healthy? When are we going to see this guy? When are we going to see that guy? We'll do that when we talk to that guy right there. I like that goatee. Ed Bouchette, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, after the break. And then we wrap things up. We hear from you. We've got a list of Twitter questions. We're going to open the phone lines. We'll get the number out there in a little bit. We'll talk to you to end the show. We'll talk to Ed after the break. I'll quit talking so we can take our break. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live.
Does the offense change with Byron running the show?
Subtly. Just to lean on his strengths and minimize his weakness, but it's not anything complex in that regard. This is not his first rodeo. He's got good, charismatic leadership, man. He can make all the throws on the field. We expect winning football from him.
Mike, are you confident that'll play again this year?
Next question.
Oh, he goes Drew Rosenhaus. I think that was Ed Bouchette that asked that question. Ed, was that you?
Actually, who works for their radio network and for their website. So Mike doesn't make any distinctions when there's a question he doesn't like.
Well, and that's the thing. They're playing this week by week. They don't have to say anything about any future weeks. And, oh, by the way, welcome in Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I just had to jump right into that. I hadn't heard that sound. But what is the answer to the question everyone is asking? How long will Ben Roethlisberger be out? Do we know? Do we have an idea? Do we have an educated guess?
Well, I think one interesting thing, and first of all, there was a doctor who gave a pretty good prognosis on the internet of that rib injury and how long that might take. You know, that thing has to heal. And it might take, she said, 5 to 6 weeks, which would take him right up to the end of the season. Now, one thing interesting for me, Mike, is that they haven't even made a move to sign a quarterback on the practice squad. And I think if they thought Ben was going to be out that long, they would have, because if one of these other two guys gets hurt, they need another quarterback. And they have to have him in there learning their offense, I would think. But, you know, they did not do that this week.
And how much do they believe in Byron Leftwich? Mike Tomlin talked about his strengths and weaknesses. One of his weaknesses is he has got a slow, looping, throwing motion, so slow that even Tim Tebow says, boy, that's a slow throwing motion. How do they account for that? How do they factor in the unique qualities that Byron Leftwich has?
Yeah, first of all, they do have a lot of faith in Byron. They were going to start him when Ben was suspended 2 years ago for 4 games, and then Byron got hurt in the last preseason game, and they turned to Batch and Dennis Dixon. He has a rifle arm, and he threw deep a couple times the other day, and we haven't seen a lot of deep passes here this year with Todd Haley's offense. So I think they'll test those cornerbacks. They won't, you know, they're going to have to protect a little better for Byron than they do for Ben because Byron's not mobile. And he has said that, and they know that. So they're going to have to protect a little better, but I still think they're going to try and test those corners, and I would look for a couple maybe more deep passes than we've seen lately. And they hope to get, you know, against, they have a 26-run defense. It's funny to say that about the Baltimore Ravens, but the Steelers hope to get the running game going and take even more pressure off him.
Helping in that passing game, the fact that Jimmy Smith is out after sports hernia surgery. The Ravens lost Ladarius Webb for the season several weeks ago. But the Steelers likely won't have Antonio Brown. What do we know about when he's going to be back, and why haven't they signed a veteran to replace him?
Well, one reason is they wanted somebody who's been in their offense. I don't know that there's a veteran out there. I mean, everybody knows Plexico's out there, but they're not going to bring him in. They've been going with only four receivers all year on the roster, and then they only use three. They've hardly ever trot out four like they used to, even five. They go to Heath Miller a lot more. He's actually their leading receiver in receptions. So barring an injury, they feel they're okay. They brought a kid up from the practice squad they liked in the preseason, David Gilreath. He returned some punts last week, or tried to anyway. So they think they're okay there. Now, another injury would change that. But I think Antonio Brown probably should be able to come back next week.
Now, you mentioned the running game, and it seems like every week it's a different guy who gets the start, and he seems to do well. Who's healthy, who's not healthy this week from that four- or five-headed rotation that they have?
They're all, and I'm going to put quotes around this, healthy right now, Mike. Rashard Mendenhall's been practicing all week. I expect him to play, maybe even start on Sunday. Isaac Redman has had two ankle problems, but it didn't stop him 2 weeks ago against the Giants. And Jonathan Dwyer's overcome a thigh injury that really, he said, tightened on him more than getting bruised or anything. So they're pretty healthy at that position right now, maybe as good as they've been all year.
What's the offensive line done this year? Because, quite, you know, we hear about an offensive line when it's struggling. When it gets its business under control, we never talk about the offensive line. We talk about 100-yard rushers. We talk about how great the passing game is. The offensive line doesn't get any credit. What's the offensive line done this year to get better on the fly?
Well, one big move was putting Willie Colon at left guard, and after, you know, it took him a little while to adjust to that, especially, he told me, the pulling part. You know, he's never had to do that. And he's just playing lights out right now, both in pass blocking and in run blocking. The only thing that's really been a problem for him has been holding calls. And then Mike Adams, a rookie, has come on real nice at right tackle. Again, he's a pretty good run blocker. He's allowed a few sacks. He doesn't have the quickest feet, so he's susceptible to a pass rush, but he's done pretty well there. Pouncey is Pouncey. And Max Starks has just been as steady as I've seen him play at left tackle. And there's another guard, Ramon Foster, who played there last year. He's gotten better. He's a tough guy. He used to be a tackle at Tennessee. And I think he's learned the position more the more he plays it, and he's just gotten better at right guard. You know, that's where David DeCastro, their first-round pick, was supposed to play before he got hurt.
And I ran into DeCastro and Andrew Luck at the West Virginia-Baylor game back when the West Virginia football team was actually good. DeCastro looked to be moving fine. Do they expect to get anything out of him this year?
Yeah, I think they still hope to. You know, he's eligible to come back to practice anytime. He has not yet, because once he does, it's a three-week window where they have to decide whether to put him on a roster or put him on IR for good. So I think they're just waiting. And, you know, some other injuries at other positions could change that as well, especially if they think Ramon Foster's playing well enough. They could decide not to use him this year, but, you know, their intent all along was to do so, and they're – the prognosis was it would be late in the season. And, you know, we're starting to get there now. But, again, they'll have 3 weeks once they start practicing.
A guy we haven't seen much of this season, and the Steelers finally have adjusted to his absence, Troy Polamalu. He's played in only two games due to a calf injury. Any word on when we can expect to see him again, Ed?
Boy, that's a strange one, Mike. He hasn't been – I haven't seen him even out there running. It's been almost complete shutdown. He's been around. He's been rehabbing. He's been, you know, in the trainer's room and all that other stuff he has to do to rehab that calf. But maybe he is running, but I haven't seen him.
And he just seems like the kind of guy who, and I think when he goes, he's just going to disappear. When he's done, no fanfare, no press call, he's just done. He's gone, that's it. And do you get any sense that he may be getting close to that point where he decides he's had enough football?
You know, I asked him that early on, shortly after his second, after he aggravated that calf injury, and he said no, he still intends to play. And I asked him if he was going to try any different off-season training, because he goes out with the quarterback's father out there on the West Coast. I forget his name now. The kid who couldn't eat a hamburger when he was coming into the draft. Anyway, that's been, he has a different training routine, but he says no, he's gonna keep to that too. So I think he intends to keep playing, but I agree with you. Once he stops, that's gonna be it, and you know, we might not find out for a while that he did stop.
How much does it help the defense to have Ryan Clark cleared after he's had his second concussion in 3 weeks? Because without Polamalu, you need somebody back there with that veteran savvy. Does that significantly enhance the performance of the defense Sunday night to have Clark available?
Yeah, very much so. He calls all the back signals there, and that's another guy who's really improved over the last several years. You know, he had a Pro Bowl season last year, and I think he's playing better this year. He comes up. He's with him and Polamalu. They've been, you know, they were when they're on the field together last year. They were really good together. They know each other. But they made another move. They put Will Allen in Polamalu's spot. It was always Ryan Monday before, and Allen has also helped settle things down. He's been real much better than Monday was when he played.
What do you think about this team's chances if Roethlisberger doesn't play again in the regular season? They're holding on to that 5-6 seed range. I still think they're going to beat the Ravens on Sunday night, even without Roethlisberger. But what do you think the chances are for the Steelers getting to the postseason if Roethlisberger doesn't play again down the stretch?
I think they're still good. Maybe not win the division, but as far as making the playoffs, like I said, Leftwich has been around. You know, he's no untested young guy they don't know about. And they do have Charlie Batch behind them, who also, I mean, those two guys I thought had pretty good preseasons. Both had high passer ratings and just looked good running that offense. So I think they still feel okay about the quarterback position. And, you know, if their defense can rise up a little more, you know, they've given up like four leads in the fourth quarter this year. Every team has its problems. I mean, look at what Baltimore's gone through. Obviously, when you lose your number one quarterback and he's one of the elite in the league, it's a bigger problem. But I think the Steelers have enough there that they can get through. I don't know that they're going to go on and win the Super Bowl if Roethlisberger doesn't come back, but I think they can be competitive the rest of the way.
And even without Ben Roethlisberger, without Ray Lewis, without Ladarius Webb, without Antonio Brown, without Troy Polamalu, it is still one of the best rivalries in all of sports. We look forward to seeing the game on Sunday night. Ed, thanks for your time. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Mike, anytime. Thanks.
All right, Ed Bouchette, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I still can't get over Mike Tomlin going next question. He doesn't want to talk about the future of Ben Roethlisberger, even if it's one of the guys that's on the payroll of the Rooneys, just like Tomlin is. After the break, we open the phone lines to you. And I will not answer any question by saying next question, although I don't want to make that kind of an open-ended commitment. You never know. I could pause. Maybe I will go next question. You're going to have to stay for the next segment to find out. And if you want to ask me that question, whether it's the next question or the question after that, call 888-237-5269. Some days I know the number. Some days I have no idea what the number is. That could be a problem. But today I know it. 888-237-5269. We'll be right back with your calls, your tweets, and whatever else I feel like talking about in the final segment of the show. Stick around. We'll be right back. Straight to the Twitter mailbag, as we always do whenever we do these segments. We usually do them every Friday. It's Friday, so we're doing it. At PatCole817, what's the prediction for Nick Foles? High expectations are making matters worse in Philly. Well, I guess there's an in-between. I don't really have high expectations for Nick Foles, but with Mike Vick struggling much of the year, you just get to a point where you want to see what the backup can do. And Nick Foles looked good in the preseason, but obviously in the preseason you're going against other second and third stringers. A lot of those guys aren't even in the NFL anymore. Most of those guys aren't in the NFL. There's Nick Foles there. He's got a little bit of that Napoleon Dynamite thing going, which may or may not be a good thing. I don't know. I think it's kind of funny. If I was Nick Foles, I probably wouldn't. But at the same time, he's a big guy. He's got a good arm. You got to get rid of the ball quickly. With that offensive line in shambles this year, that's been the challenge. Get rid of the ball and use that running game to soften up the defense. If you can't pass the ball, use LeSean McCoy, who still gets his yards, behind a makeshift offensive line. Always got to be important to enunciate the F when you say makeshift. So, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Anyway, I don't know what to expect. I picked the Eagles to win, though. It's one of the games MDS and I disagree on. I think the Eagles have enough on offense to overcome what the Redskins don't have on defense. Now, the question is, what can the Eagles' defense do against Robert Griffin III? Should be a sneaky kind of a good game because the winner really is done. I mean, we said it last week, or the loser's done. The winner may be done, too. Cowboys, Eagles, whoever loses is done. Well, the Eagles lost, but now we can say whoever loses this one is really done at 3-7. The winner still has a little bit of a glimmer. I like, though, the idea that the Eagles are going to give Nick Foles a run. Let's see what he can do. Can't get much worse because they've lost now 5 games in a row. Next up, and Buck, I hate it when I don't know what that word. Is there a word I'm missing in there? NBU Ekline? Not a Tebow guy. Sick of it, really. But is this his last chance? What other team would be willing to take on this nonsense? That's a great question. And here's my answer. No one is ever going to bring in Tim Tebow under these circumstances where he's the backup, where he's a jack of all trades, master of none. If you're going to bring in Tim Tebow, he's your quarterback, and that's it. He's your starter. You don't play this game where you put any – and you have to acknowledge he's terrible in practice. Understand that going in. Off-season workouts, training camp, he's going to be inaccurate. He's going to be throwing bounce passes. He's going to be throwing the ball over the guy's head. If I said this before on the show, somebody was at one of the Jets games. Told me, somebody in the media said that Tebow was on the sideline during the game throwing passes and he was inaccurate then. He was bouncing the ball, standing there throwing without helmets onto a guy who was just having a catch and he wasn't accurate. If you accept that and you're willing to take the good with the bad, maybe you do get the good. You're going to get plenty of bad, maybe you do get the good. But that's the only circumstances where anyone's going to take on Tim Tebow. And a lot of people believe, and I know Jaguars fans don't want to hear it, and some in the media don't believe it, but the last stop on his NFL career will be Jacksonville as the starting quarterback. And if it's not there, then maybe it's Canada. Maybe it's, I don't know, the Arena Football in Canada. I don't know. But the thing is, the guy brings interest. The guy generates attention. Don't rule out the Cardinals either. Cardinals for maybe Mike Vick. Cardinals for maybe Tim Tebow. He's not going to want to stay in New York under these circumstances. The ugliness of this week, I think, is just the icing on that cake. He wants out. He's got a file in that cake. He's going to be getting out of New York after this season. And he'll never say it publicly, but I think privately he's going to make it known to the owner if he has to. I want out of here. And not many people in New York will shed tears when that happens. Next up, he's back. Run the music. Here we go.
The Bay Area Bad Boy. San Francisco.
Sam, you're up, buddy.
Hey, Mike. It's the 9-time NFL champion Chicago Bears coming to the stick on Monday Night Football to challenge the 5-time undefeated Super Bowl champion San Francisco 49ers. I remember that 26-10 rout back in the mid-80s like it was yesterday. My brother, a couple years my elder, forced me to watch William Perry trot onto the field as a bruising fullback in an effort to humiliate us. A slap in the face applied from Mike Ditka to the late Bill Walsh. What the fridge did that day, that memory is a moment frozen in time. Well, guess what? Time's up. We're not just snacking on peanuts by the bay. We're hunting all the bears. And there's one wounded cub especially who should take caution. Jay Crybaby Cutler. Recently causing a stir for exiting a playoff game early, he would serve himself best this time by not showing up at all. Speaking king of diva quarterbacks, I found your comment on Roethlisberger embellishing his injury and referencing potential amputation to be hilarious. Seriously, comic genius. I give it to the Rams. We took them lightly, and they took us to overtime. 4 years later, Donovan McNabb was officially off my proverbial hook and no longer considered the dumbest NFL player ever. The next time somebody says fans shouldn't say we when referring to our franchises, at least we know the rules. Signing off, San Francisco from San Francisco.
There he is, bringing the heat as he usually does. And Sam, you'll be happy to know that the Bears have announced Jay Cutler is out. Jason Campbell will start on Monday night at a time when all signs point to Alex Smith being able to start for the San Francisco 49ers. So adjust your fantasy lineups accordingly. Jay Cutler out. Not a real surprise, but of those three quarterbacks who suffered concussions last weekend, one looks to be playing Alex Smith. The other two, Mike Vick, Jay Cutler, down for week 11. Next up, Zach in South Carolina. You're on PFT Live.
Hey, where do you think that Steven Jackson will end up at in the offseason?
Great question. I don't think it's going to be in St. Louis. There was a report earlier this year that they're not going to pick up the option on his contract. And here's the problem with the running back market. Guys who hit that market in free agency don't get paid a whole lot of money. And that's one of the reasons why the Rams aren't going to pick up the option. It's like $7.5 million for Steven Jackson in 2013. Veteran running backs who are chewed up and spit out and they've got banged up knees and they've had injuries and they're getting on the wrong side of 30 or close to it, they just don't get the kind of attention. They don't get the kind of money. Remember last year when the running backs were being signed, we were comparing the contracts to kicker contracts. Kickers were getting paid better than veteran running backs. Guys like Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Cedric Benson couldn't even get anything close to what he wanted. He had to wait and wait and wait and wait, and he finally did a one-year deal for the veteran minimum with the Green Bay Packers. So, I think Steven Jackson, once he realizes he's not going to get paid, he is going to go to a team that he views to be a contender that is one hard-nosed running back away from being a Super Bowl champion. And the Green Bay Packers, I think, become the most obvious candidate for that because they've got all the other pieces. They tried it with Cedric Benson this year. He got hurt. I think Steven Jackson makes a lot of sense for the Green Bay Packers. Next up, Matt Strada. Do the Vikings have a shot at the playoffs? Well, in theory, yes. They're 6-4. But I can't remember any other 6-4 team that was looking at possibly six straight losses to finish the season. We've talked about this a few times, or maybe more frequently. Bears, Packers, Bears, right out of the gate after the bye. Welcome back from your bye week. Hope you got some rest. You're going to Soldier Field, and then you're going to Lambeau Field. The only good news for the Vikings is maybe they'll be facing Jason Campbell week 12 and not Jay Cutler, and it's going to be the Bears on a short week traveling back from San Francisco. So, you know, maybe I've been wrong all along. Maybe the Vikings steal that one at Soldier Field and move to 7-4. That's the pivotal game for the Vikings right out of the bye. Can they win at Soldier Field? If they don't, then I think it's time to grease the skids. At Green Bay, Chicago, at St. Louis, no slouch. At Houston, definitely no slouch. And then you finish up with the Green Bay Packers. It's going to be tough to win more than one of those games. It's going to be tough to win enough to get to the postseason. So I think they have a shot, but I'd bet the under at this point as to whether or not the Vikings make it to the postseason. Next up, we got Jack in Cincinnati. Jack, you're on PFT Live.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? I was just wondering how the Bengals' next 5 years looking. How do you think?
The next 5 years for the Cincinnati Bengals? Well, that's an interesting question. They've been a roller coaster type of a franchise in recent years. They've never made it to the playoffs in two consecutive seasons. Non-strike seasons. Back in 1982, they got back to the postseason, but it was that nine-game season. They took eight teams from each conference. That doesn't count. They've never made it in two straight non-strike seasons. And as of right now, who knows? I mean, they look like they were going down the drain. They went from 3-1 to 3-5. They beat the Giants 4-5. Schedule softens. But when you have the quarterback situation taken care of, and they seem to with Andy Dalton, although some people are wondering, A.J. Green, I think the best young receiver in the NFL, arguably the best receiver overall in the NFL, Geno Atkins creating havoc last week against the Giants. They've got a good nucleus. The question is, can they make the right moves to put guys around their nucleus and not just do what Mike Brown has done over the years, which is, you go out and you sign a guy who's talented but has had some sort of issue off the field. You get too many of those guys, it's really hard to pull together and get through adversity. But they made a big step last week beating the Giants. They could still get back to the postseason, especially with the Steelers wobbling now, potentially, without Roethlisberger. I said it earlier, Bills, Bengals, two teams to watch who could rise up and take that sixth seed. But, you know, the Bengals aren't going to be nearly as horrible as they were in past years. They're going to be competitive, and the more they get out of A.J. Green and Andy Dalton, the better off they're going to be. So I think that I'm not saying Super Bowl is going to come to the Cincinnati Bengals, but I think they're going to come into a stretch of extended, consistent competitiveness that maybe they've never seen before. Next up, Will Roach. Is it just me or is Tom Brady falling under the radar? Not much talk about Brady despite his pace for another great year. Well, yeah, that's the thing. We like news stories. We like intriguing storylines. Tom Brady showing up and being Tom Brady every year gets a little stale. Nothing new about it. He's not coming back from an injury, not really doing, you know, it's Tom Brady. You expect it. You take it for granted. Now, if Tom Brady would tear an ACL and be out for the rest of the year and come back in 2013, that'd be one of the bigs, or 2014 or 2013. We saw what Adrian Peterson did. He could tear an ACL now. Brady couldn't come back week one. Then it would be a bigger story. But we're caught up in the Peyton Manning saga. We're caught up in the Colts and Andrew Luck and Chuck Pagano. We like the interesting stories, and there's nothing interesting about a guy who keeps showing up and getting it done. 18 touchdown passes, 3 interceptions. And when we talk about the Patriots, we do take for granted the offense. We're wagging a finger at their defense because their defense has let them down. They've lost 3 games by a total of 4 points. And those are games where they fell apart down the stretch. So the Patriots, remember, not that long ago, every team in that division was 3-3. Now the Patriots are 6-3, and the other three are just a mess. Although I know Bills fans, I don't want to rain on your parade. You've got some hope. But the Patriots are running away with that division right now, and Brady will get more and more accolades as they get closer and closer to that prize. And if they continue to win, if they don't lose another game, we'll be hearing talk about Brady for MVP. Once again, Tim in North Carolina, you're on PFT Live.
Yes, quick question. Is Adrian Peterson going to be the first player to win Comeback Player of the Year and Most Valuable Player of the Year?
Who now? Who'd you say? I'm sorry.
You there, Mike? You know what?
Adrian Peterson, I got you. I'm sorry. This is the danger of multitasking. I had
That's
a message I had to read. So I'm listening while I'm reading, and sometimes when I'm reading, I'm not listening. So I didn't have to go next question. I just had to say, ask me that question again. But I got you. Adrian Peterson, could he be Comeback Player of the Year and MVP? You know, this is going to be one of the biggest questions for those 50 voters who typically make the decision the day after the regular season ends, and they have to send in their votes the day after the regular season ends, even though we don't know who wins the awards until like the night before the Super Bowl because they made a separate. And I've been saying they need to do this, but there's just too much time between casting the ballots and giving out the awards. We talked about this earlier in the week, Peyton Manning versus Adrian Peterson as the Comeback Player of the Year. You can make a strong argument for either guy. And based on what the Vikings do down the stretch, what do they get out of their passing game? How many yards can Adrian Peterson rack up? Do the Vikings get to the playoffs? Can they get back into the division chase? A lot that still needs to be decided. But there's a way the dominoes fall that Adrian Peterson does end up getting some serious MVP consideration, along with Comeback Player of the Year consideration. And we've seen plenty of guys come back from torn ACLs, but we've never seen a guy come back from a torn ACL the way this guy has. He's better than ever after a torn ACL. He still runs the same way as he always did. That was the first thing people thought when he tore that ACL last Christmas Eve. This guy's never going to be the same. He'll come back and play, but he's never going to be the same. Not only is he the same, he's better than he ever was. And that's amazing. So whether it's Comeback Player of the Year, MVP, something else, we'll see. But that's what's going to make the final 6 games for the Vikings of the season even more intriguing, because as the Vikings go, as the passing game goes, as Adrian Peterson goes, that's going to help determine what happens with that postseason award consideration. Last tweet back to the Twitter bag, Mike Adams NC. Can the Panthers rebound this year? Any chance of saving the coaching staff? I doubt it. I know they beat the Redskins a couple of weeks ago, but they got blown off the field by former coach John Fox. And this is going to come down to what the new general manager wants to do. New general manager going to be hired at the recommendation of Ernie Accorsi, the former Giants GM. New general manager is going to want his own coach, more likely than not. Ron Rivera is going to be in danger of being fired. And, you know, we raised the possibility this week that once you get the new GM, once you get the new head coach, are they going to want Cam Newton? It's going to be easier than ever before to trade that first overall draft pick contract because we're not talking about the kind of money that we've had in the past. And down the stretch, there are some winnable games, arguably, but a lot more losses than wins when it's all said and done for the 2-7 Panthers. Another disappointing season, especially because of the expectations for this team. After going from 2-14 to 6-10, the expectations were they were going to take another jump and maybe be in playoff contention. And their starting center, Ryan Khalil, had that full-page ad before the season about the Super Bowl. Boy, that seems like a distant memory for this franchise. They got a long way to go to turn it around, and I don't see it happening this year. We're going to turn it around and come back on Monday. I'll be in Connecticut for PFT Live after we've seen the Sunday games for Week 11. A lot of great games coming up, a lot of close ones, a lot of tough ones to call when it's time to pick who's going to win. So enjoy the games. We'll see you on Monday. Check us out at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, NBC Sports Talk. No, Pro Football Talk on the NBC Sports Network. Peter King will be on NBC Sports Talk after Pro Football Talk. We're open all weekend long. ProFootballTalk.com. Check us out then. Stick around for the highlights of the week that was the U.S. Bank NBC Sports Report with Kay Adams. We'll see you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
He didn't alert the medical staff until that something was amiss until just before he was about ready to go onto the field for that next series.
It's like a fight referee trying to, you know, if he steers a standing eight count, you know, can the guy continue? You know, if he can keep his hands up and let the fight go on.
I did have a chance to see Mike Vick. He certainly did not look at his best. His eyes were glazed over and didn't look like someone who was ready to get right back out there.
Has anybody publicly had to deal with more scrutiny about an injury than Peyton Manning? I'll leave it to the others to make that choice, but I don't think you could go wrong either way.
I feel like this is my week. I say it every week, and you keep moving ahead of me in the standings, but this is my week.
Was that you?
Actually, it works for their radio network and for their website, so Mike doesn't make any distinctions when there's a question he doesn't like.
Now, I'm pulling up the online roster of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't see Sean King on there. What's this wee stuff?
Well, you know, a lot of blood, sweat, tears, hard work in that organization down there.